Good evening and welcome to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. I know it's 7 o'clock p.m. on Wednesday. I know that because here I sit in the studio of WINT and we're about to start our program. And our program consists of talking about small businesses. When I say we, I'm talking about my long-term business partner, Adam Sunhalter, who's standing next to me in a suit and tie. He's got his hair slicked back. He looks like a real Wall Street guy. He felt like dressing up tonight, so that's what he's doing.
That's the beauty of radio. You can say whatever you want and paint whatever picture you want, Jack. It's beautiful.
Now, I in contrast, am sitting here in jeans and a summer shirt and fighting the 90-degree weather outside.
Don't lie. Tell him you're here in your bathing suit, Jack, and your sandals. That's it. He's blinding me with the whiteness. It's good. All right.
That's right. That's right. I need sun. It's too late. 7 o'clock is too late. Anyway, what we do... For this show, we talk about our coaching. We have a coaching company, Adam and I. It's called Maximum Value Partners. When I say coaching, small business coaches, that's what we are. We deal with companies that have from 1 to 25 employees. Any industry makes no difference. We can help them, and we've helped hundreds. We've been doing this for over 15 years together, and we've had great successes with dealing with small business owners. So we know what to do. If the business owner is basically up to the task to do it, they're going to be successful, and we define that as growing sustainable profits. So we make the content of our Wednesday evening show from the annals of our coaching experiences. We deal with clients every day, and we like to take what seems to be trending and put that into a program. And we also just take business topics of various types and kinds, and that'll make a program up for an hour. And most of all, we try to have some fun. Adam really isn't wearing a suit, but he is wearing a bow tie.
And that's it.
That's it.
That's it. There we go.
That's why I just moved down to the other microphone. You got to picture this, folks, because that's how it is in this little studio.
You say a small, intimate studio means all kinds of things. That's right.
That's right. So tonight, we picked the topic, and we'll define this topic as the purpose. What is the purpose of the financial statements? What the heck is a financial statement, first of all? We'll explore that a little bit. But let me answer the question I just asked. What's the purpose of financial statements? It's to present the financial position and the performance of a company. It's a historical base number, or numbers as it goes. And it consists of the financial statements, which basically are what, Adam? What are the financial statements?
The most important ones for their small business would be the balance sheet and the profit and loss, also known as a P&L or an income statement. Those are the two most important when it comes to the historical piece of it.
But is that the answer to what are the financial statements?
Well, it's two of the four. You got two other statements. You got a statement of cash flows and a statement of retained earnings.
Excelente. I knew you'd get that. I knew you'd get that answer.
That's because of the suit and tie and slicked back hair.
That's right. So the purpose of the financial statement, I told you, and the financial statements are those four statements. In other words, Some fancy pants kind of guy is going to ask you one day, hey, show me your financial statement. And you're going to think that's one document, and you're going to panic. You don't even know what the heck they're talking about. But that financial statement isn't one document. It's four documents. And basically, the purpose, again, some more purposes of the financial statement. It shows the liquidity of the company. It's a fancy pants word, Adam. Liquidity? Is that like filling a glass full of water, or is it what?
Yeah, that could be. That could be one way to be very liquid.
If you're in liquid, that's
any type and kind.
Okay, so it shows liquidity. We'll get back to that word too. Profitability, the financial strength of a company, like lifting weights. Your company lifts weights, and if it lifts enough weights, you're going to get pretty strong. And if you keep dropping them on your toes, it's not going to work too good.
Right.
Okay, credit worthiness, and all the activity that goes on in your business, all of it, In other words, everything going on in a business generally has a cost or an expense or a revenue to it. And those activities basically are condensed into the numbers. So if you become masterful with the numbers, and those are really the financial statements, you can run your company anywhere, from anywhere in the world, especially in today's world of technology. It's wonderful. But you got to learn how to do that first. So the purpose of the financial statements are what we're going to bat around tonight. We don't know where it's going to take us, but it doesn't make any difference. We should have some fun.
That's right. It's our show. We can do whatever we want to do, right?
That's right.
I think part of it, too, I think we'd like to come to the conclusion to help people understand how to use them to make some decisions. You know, simple examples. How do you make a decision to hire or fire somebody? If you're looking to purchase some equipment, if you're looking to go present to a bank or a potential buyer of your company. Maybe you're looking at potentially firing a customer. Yeah, there's a lot of day-to-day decisions that kind of go on that I think we'd like to shed some light on, Jack, to kind of give people a sense for here's how you start to use these things. Because, you know, we found in our time together, Jack, it's been over 16 years now, we've worked with hundreds of small companies and met thousands more. And as we talked to them, most of them can produce financial statement. And when you said that a couple minutes ago, I was having a flashback to an Office episode where Jim Halpert was, as after, I think it was when Michael Scott, you know, left to form his own paper company. And then they had this new guy come in, and he asked Jim, hey, can you come in and give me a rundown on your clients? He goes, no problem. When do you want it? He goes, as soon as possible. He says, no problem. All right. And the guy goes back in his office, and Jim goes, what the hell's a rundown? Right? Yeah, what do I do? So he's trying to figure out sly ways to figure out what exactly the rundown. So he goes in, hey, so how would you like to see that rundown? Kind of, you know, what do you want to see? Like, just normal stuff, you know, in the rundown, right? So
it's like poking for information right. from him, but without asking the question.
Exactly.
He's beating around the bush rather than just, hey, like, I don't know what a rundown is. Like, can you just tell me so I can get this done? And, you know.
That's right, Scotty. So what happens is that's the same position that often the owner gets into when all of a sudden somebody asks them for your financials. They figure, hey, you're an owner. You must know what those things are. And you go, oh, of course, no problem. And they go, now what? So often it's a lot of that miscommunication or people are kind of going back and forth, don't know what they're talking about or don't know how to communicate it. So, but most of the owners we find they can produce a financial statement. And we've seen everything from, you know, legal or small legal pads with handwritten notes on it to track stuff. All the way to more sophisticated financial systems that are being printed off the computer or up in the cloud somewhere and everything in between. So we know we can usually get some sort of financials from folks, but we aren't. But even the ones we have, ones that might be in good, what we would call a kind of good shape or better shape, it's rare that they know how to use them.
Yeah, they don't know what they're looking at. They can run so many small businesses use QuickBooks. So they can generate, as long as all the data is put in there, they can generate a balance sheet and a profit and loss. They can generate it, but they don't know what they're looking at when they look at it and try to present it. That's good point, Adam.
That's right. So I think a big part of what we'd like to do tonight is kind of go through and give some examples about, we could play some scenarios. Say, you know, here's what happened. We have a lot of stories to share, too, about it in terms of, you know, if you're going to do things. Like, how do you know if somebody's stealing from you? Okay, we had a client years ago who was based here in Northeast Ohio, but had a business that was a couple thousand miles away. And would you believe this owner caught somebody stealing simply by using his financials? Started to raise things up. He started looking at the financials and seeing, I'll use shrinkage, Jack, you're using liquidity. He was seeing a shrinking in his margins. His gross margins were, you know, they were going down. He couldn't explain why it was happening. So he started to suspect after a little while, hey, maybe something's going on where somebody might be stealing some stuff, because they happened to be in a business. Part of the business included some food, okay, and included a kitchen. And so he installed some cameras in the business. And wouldn't you know it, every day he'd see one of his guys walked in weighing 125 pounds, walked out weighing 145 pounds because he was stuffing stuff in.
Absolutely
amazing. To go feed his family and stuff like that. So here he was a couple thousand miles away, and by looking at and using his numbers, his financials, Jack, he was able to see some changes that he couldn't explain.
Yeah, it alerted him to a problem. How come these numbers are showing this trend? Why? What happened? And it directs you in terms of where to start looking, and it allows you to suspect the problem because of the trends. And that's huge. That's one element of many that the financial numbers, the financial statements give you the opportunity to analyze your business.
Well, I can almost guarantee, Jack, that every owner listening to this has either experienced a version of that, or that's one of their biggest fears, and that's what they're trying to figure out. How do I know? How do I know somebody's not stealing from me? How do I know that people are doing things the right way? Because there are lots of ways for folks, if they want to try to steal from you. And often it's done with the best of intentions. You know, you may have somebody in a position, like the example we gave is more for a frontline worker stealing some product. That's often the case where you have, you know, folks in warehouses and stuff like that. We've got a bunch of things lying around. Things often will just kind of, people have sticky fingers, things disappear.
They disappear, that's
But
right.
If you go into the more the administrative side of the business, where folks are handling a lot of the financial stuff, handling money's coming in, money's going out, and dealing with vendors and dealing with invoicing and stuff like that, where all of a sudden there's ways for them to be a little more creative and finding ways to get money out of the business. And they'll start usually very small. And it could be they're setting up a fake vendor, and they're sending a check there for $10. And part of what they sort of do is they try to just see, does anybody notice? Does anybody notice what's going on?
Does anybody notice, and is the structure of the company, the organization, made to divide duties and prevent those kinds of things, or certainly highlight them? If those kinds of actions aren't taken, and the numbers will drive this, then you're gonna lose and be sorry for it. Many times you don't even know you lost.
So one of the simple areas we often dig into, Jack, when people are looking at their financials or presenting them, there's often you'll see lines, and this may be helpful for you to go back and look at some of your financials. If you print off your P&L, do you see a line item on there that says miscellaneous?
Oh, my God.
Or something to that effect?
Isn't that like, that's a mortal sin, Adam, to have a miscellaneous account.
Well,
all you're doing is admitting that the activity that's driving payments, let's say, for example, you don't know what those payments are for. So you put them in a miscellaneous category. That's kind of crazy, isn't it? I'm making payments, and I don't know what it's for.
Well, yeah, I didn't write a check to miscellaneous. I wrote a check to somebody. But it's often, if it's there, if it's a constant thing and you aren't asking questions about it, that's a great place to start to hide stuff, Jack. If I'm a financial person coming in and looking for ways or weaknesses in the company, ways for me to kind of get some extra money out of here, that's one of the areas I might check out and see. And if month after month, all of a sudden, you're reviewing the numbers and you aren't asking questions about things, well, what was a $10 invoice last month, it becomes a $100 invoice this month, and it becomes a $500 invoice next quarter. Because that's usually what happens. Things start to continue to ramp up, and they get more and more greedy and start to look at stuff. But it happens. It's very, very common, a common challenge that having theft in your small business.
And usually it doesn't stop. If you get away with it, you basically will continue doing it until there's changes. One of the biggest changes is to catch your ass and fire you. That's one big change.
Well, so we had a client recently had something like that happen where it was with company credit cards.
Right.
Right, and the person was using things for personal stuff, and you know, they weren't using the same vendors that they typically used to seeing. Yeah, they're used to seeing these guys kind of go and, you know, put gas in the vehicles or go to the local hardware store to get something, whatever it might be. There are normal things that wouldn't raise any flags, but all of a sudden they're going to the grocery store, or they're going to Dollar General or something. They're going to some place where it's like, oh, so hey, people, hey, what's going on here, right? So if you're looking at stuff, just that alone can help to prevent some of these things. So, all right, when we come back, we got some more discussions about this in terms of, again, you know, what's the purpose of these financials? How do you start to use them to do stuff to make better decisions in your business and what's going on? We got lots of stories to share about this and some great insights. So stay tuned. I'm Adam Sunhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini, and we are having fun.
Always.
Wednesday evening at WINT 101.5.
That's right. Stick around. We got more Dirty Secrets of Small Business coming your way here on Integrity Radio, WINT 1330 AM, 101.5 FM, and online, WINTradio.com. All right. Welcome back to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sunhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini.
And tonight we're talking about the purpose of the financial statements, and really the more important thing is, how do you use these things being the financials, Jack, and to make better business decisions? Because at the end of the day, if you aren't using them, you're really flying blind here in terms of going by gut, whatever term you want to use, whatever phrase you want to use, but you can be doing better. And the numbers are there to help you be better. Be better as an owner.
How in the world can you run a company without having financial statements? I don't know how you do it. Well, I know how you do it. You don't do it well.
Well,
you can't do it well, and you're counting on luck to carry you through, because if you can't frame it in the numbers, and you're in the business to make profits, and that's true of all companies, whether they're nonprofit or for-profit, they're in the business of making profit. So a profit and loss statement seems to be a fundamental document that you need.
Sure. Well, I want to get into this a little too, Jack. We talked a little bit in the first segment about what the financial statements are, kind of went through that. But we didn't touch on, because you mentioned, too, a very important fact, which is that these financial statements, Jack, are historical. So it's looking back, and it's giving you a sense of how things were. You know, it's like a nice photo album. You know, you're looking back and see, yeah, that was nice. That was kind of cool. And you can relive some memories like, that was kind of a cool trip, or that was kind of a cool event, right? So you can say, hey, that was a kind of a good quarter, or it was a neat, good year. That was a kind of a cool customer here, or whatever it might be. Or, hey, that was a tough quarter, or a tough month, whatever it might be. But you're looking back. That's great, but we can't really do much about that, right?
We can't.
We can mess with them and make them look pretty, but again, we can't really do too much with those. The real key is starting to be able to look forward, right? And so having some forward-looking statements that are going to help us do that. So those are a couple we start to focus on. One is a profit plan.
Profit plan.
Okay.
What's that like?
As you might guess by listening here, a profit plan is closely associated to the profit and loss statement, right? Because it's a profit plan looking forward. The same format as our profit and loss statement with our revenue and our expenses and our profits, but now instead of looking backwards, looking historically, we use this to look forward, to forecast out.
Yeah, it's a plan to make profit. Boy, that sounds pretty logical, doesn't it?
So we forecast sales, we forecast expenses, and we show what the profits are going to be. It's our best guesses today. If we look out for the next, whether it be the next quarter, for the next, you know, 6 months, for the next year, we try to get our clients to looking out a year at a time if they can, by month. That's the best way to kind of be. Eventually, you know, people will get there. If you're not doing anything, you start with an annual plan to kind of, again, start looking forward. So the profit plan is one key, and another key forecasting document is a cash forecast.
Oh, man.
Okay.
Isn't that what you're in business for, the profits and the cash that comes from those profits?
So if you have those couple of documents, and the cash forecast, we look at a 90-day cash forecast. So literally forecasting out by day what you'd expect your cash balance to be. So what cash is coming in, what cash is going out by day. And again, starting from ground zero, if you have nothing, okay, let's look at today. Let's look at this week. Maybe we get for 2 weeks. Maybe we get 4 weeks out. Eventually, you want to get to where you have 90 days out. But to start, again, looking forward, because what happens is why we want to look forward is we're talking about making decisions. Again, that's what this is about. How do we use the financial statements? How do we use them to start to make better decisions?
That's right.
So we start to have some forecasts. So if we're going to look at something, let me give a very simple example. We had a client years ago, Jack, who was I'll call it a pretty deep turnaround. And it was a case where it was a transition from one generation to the next, and the kids that were working in the business had a sense things weren't going that well, but they didn't really know. That's very common. You know, often the owners will keep things kind of close to the vest, especially if things aren't going well, but people have a feel. People have a sense if things are going well or aren't going well. So they had a sense that things weren't going well, and after the parent passed away, it became they got to see all the stuff, and they realized what happened was they were in debt to the tune of about $250,000, and they owed everybody, you know, all the different vendors that they owed, from the utility companies to the landlord, to Uncle Sam, to their CPA, you name it. Everybody was owed something, okay. And so if you're in that situation, all of a sudden, here you are, you're in this big hole, you're in this big deficit. Well, how do you decide if you move on versus just close things up and shut the place down?
If you don't have financials, you're going to take those dice out of your pocket and you're going to roll them. That's it.
There we go.
You're going to hope.
No craps. Okay. No, let's go, right? Sixes and eights, Jack. Sixes and eights.
That's what we need. That's it. Sixes and eights rule the world.
So yeah, you're going to do that. You're going to do it by your gut. You're going to do it by feel, right? Or you'll do it based on, when we met this now new owner. Well, that's all they'd known. That's all they'd known for 30 years was this business. They grew up with it. That's what they'd done. And it was more emotional and charged that way. But it was, okay, here's what's driving it, but I don't know how to figure it out. So the first thing we did.
Right. So that's the name of our purpose, or the purpose of the financial statements. And and how to use those financial statements to run the company. That's right.
That's right. So the first the first thing we did here is we came to the cash forecast. We said, hey, if you're in a hole, you got to stop digging, right? Otherwise, we know we're going further into the hole. We're going to start climbing out of that hole. And so the cash forecast is the great equalizer, the great clarifier, whatever word you want to use, right?
In a situation like that, that's a huge report.
So we can see what's going on. So can we show that, hey, we're going to be bringing in more cash than's going out today, this week, this month? And we can start to kind of show that, okay, you have some confidence. Hey, we have some money to start to now attack that debt, to kind of start paying it down. And to have that plan in place to be able to go sit down and negotiate with somebody. Because I know most folks listening, you've probably been in the situation, whether you've been the one making promises or you've been the one on the receiving end of those promises from a vendor of years about, hey, Jack, I'm going to pay you next week, I promise. It's good, all right? I got it. And I have every intention of doing it. You want to believe me, but I've disappointed you in the past, Jack. And I'm probably going to disappoint you again, I'm making these promises from, I'm tearing at your heartstrings. I'm throwing everything at you to kind of get you to give me an extra week just to breathe. And I'm not only am I doing that to you, I'm doing that to Scotty, and I'm doing it to my other 16 vendors here to kind of help push you off. And then what I may do is I may write a check to each of you, and we'll see who gets to the bank first. And a couple of you might be pretty happy, and a couple of you aren't going to be so happy. Because they got there first, right? And the money wasn't there.
That's how it's done in a lot of places.
Or worse yet, maybe instead of sitting down talking to you, I duck and dodge, right?
We like to hear those stories. We like to hear the stories of why payments can't be made. We should do a show on that one of these nights. Just list all the excuses. In fact, I'll compile those, probably 100 of them. There aren't too many unique ones left anymore.
There'll be more than one show for 100 of them, Jack. Well, I think we did something like that a little while ago. It's always good to refresh that and kind of get back. Because, we've heard a lot of them, but there's always some new ones, some different ones you kind of hear about what's kind of going on. There's once in a while, it's like a police officer pulling somebody over. Eventually, they hear something new. It doesn't happen a lot, but it happens probably a few times a year. It's a new excuse, and it's enough to get the person off, right? Because it's something different.
Make the cop laugh, and life is good. That's right.
So let me come back to this turnaround I was talking about for a second, Jack. So we started to kind of forecast out the cash. And wouldn't you know it, we were able to see some positive cash coming in, okay? And over the course of the next 18 months, between paying down, negotiating away some of the debts, and then and continue to kind of go, they were able to get out of that hole.
Plus the credibility of making a commitment and being on top of it enough to know that if you aren't going to make it, you have advance notice to call that person. And that again, lends comfort and credibility. You aren't ducking them. You aren't doing things that are kind of crazy. You're being very mature about it. Adam, I know I promised you a payment of $1,000 on June 15th. I'm not going to be able to make it, but I can send you a check for $200, and I'll put you in to make the rest as soon as blah, blah, blah. And, okay, Adam will play along with me for a while, as long as I keep doing what I say.
Right.
For the common sense is, what else is he going to do? But, B, he appreciates the fact that he's being notified, and I'm putting forth effort, and he can feel it. And that keeps the relationship alive, and it works you out of the situation. Again, it takes time, that's for sure, but it works. We've done it many, many times with clients.
Absolutely. So the turnaround situation is one simple example. And again, talking to the audience here for a second directly, again, if many of you have been around for more than 10 years, maybe you had some of that happening back in 2008 when there was a financial setback. So what was kind of going on there? And a lot of companies struggled through some of that stuff. And many probably took on some debts, because they wanted to kind of keep things kind of going and perhaps took some time to kind of work out of that. But how do you know? It's one of those daunting questions, Jack. How do you know to give up or to keep on plugging ahead? And from our standpoint, if you don't have some of these numbers to kind of fall back on to help, it's strictly on gut and feel and emotion. And that can be very different in the morning versus the afternoon versus the evening versus tomorrow.
Sure.
Versus, hey, if I'm looking at the numbers give me some clarity. It can help take some of the emotion out of it. And it also enables me to help to bring other people into it. To help. Here's what we're looking at. Help me see. Is this right? Is it wrong? Is there something I'm forgetting about? We're trying to get a sense of where are we, and to know. Hey, do I need to hit the panic button? Do I need to start to make some cuts? Do I need to do adjustments? Or hey, it's just a rough patch. Keep on going. We're going to be through this thing in the next 3 months. Okay, whatever it might be, but to be able to kind of know that and see it in black and white, or if you do some colors, whatever, but to see it down somewhere versus having it in your head or in your guts can be very, very helpful when we're dealing with some tough situations. We got some other ones, too, we want to talk about that are related. Things like, how do you know if you should fire a customer or not? All right. We got more discussions about how to use your financials, really use them to make some better decisions in your business. Stay tuned. I'm Adam Sunhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini.
We got more dirty secrets of small business coming your way here on Integrity Radio, WINT 1330 AM, 101.5 FM, and online, WINTradio.com. Welcome back to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sunhalter.
And I am Jack Mancini.
And that's Scotty's tying into our sixes and eights rule of the world. He said it's 1968, the Beatles Revolution, guys. It's sixes and eights. There you go.
My God, just like the craps game that we're talking about. So I got to know.
That's right.
Six and eight.
All right. So we're talking tonight about how to use your financial statements. What's the purpose of the financial statements? How do you start to use your financial statements to make better decisions in your business? So we gave a couple examples in the first few segments about, you know, how to prevent or avoid some theft, how to maybe get out of a turnaround situation, and we're teasing to the break about how do you use it to be able to fire a customer. Now, this is one of those...
I tell you, what do I need financials for that for?
Well, that's one of those dirty secrets, Jack, because people talk about firing customers a lot. It's a common chatter at the... I wouldn't say at the water cooler, but it'll be amongst owners talking to each other about stuff. Or you know, it's one thing, hey, yeah, we should look at firing customers. That's a good idea. But boy, it doesn't happen very often, Jack. It's one of those things because most small business owners, I don't know if it's a chip that was inserted in our brains at birth or not, but to say no to a sale or to kick a sale out or a customer out is so it's so ingrained against every fiber in the body, right?
Can't do it, yeah.
So
I'm getting revenue from this customer, so how can I kick it out? How can I kick him or her out?
So I'm trying to think of an analogy that might help make the picture. Maybe we have this big buffet of food and everything else, and some of that food's kind of spoiled. But I keep eating it, and it's making me a little sick. But I keep eating it because it's there. You know, I don't want to give that food away, or I'm going to store. Where it might be, there's ways, or it's the squirrels bringing their nuts in for the winter. Where it might be,
wait a minute.
No nuts and squirrels.
No.
Okay.
All right.
So we're trying to talk about how do you know if you're going to fire? Because it's so hard. Again, if we had to do it based on gut, almost nobody would ever fire a customer because it's so ingrained against them. So you got to use some numbers to start to kind of look at stuff. So we had a client where this is becoming an issue because the customer's ordering a lot of stuff, but they weren't necessarily a good customer from a payment standpoint.
Oh, only from a payment standpoint.
So well, there are
a criteria you can use, but
that was a big
we'll
one though because
on the payment, right?
Yeah, because it came to the point where the customer had run up their credit with our customer to the point where it became a six-figure credit.
Mm-hmm.
So now all of a sudden this customer, who is, again, if you look at their sales, you probably define them as probably a pretty good customer. They order regularly. You know, they're relatively low maintenance from that standpoint. But, again, so a lot of the boxes they checked off as being a good customer. But the payment part, Jack, that little payment thing.
Part, right.
Right, yeah, that little payment thing. Because, yeah, not all these the weightings aren't equal amongst all the characteristics.
Right. It's a little annoying that's an issue, but...
So go on. So we were spending some time kind of going through our client with their accounts. The way this got discovered, we're going through their accounts receivable. Okay, that's part of what you see in your balance sheet, folks. And there's often if you click on it, there's a report. If you have like QuickBooks or any other accounting system, it's an accounts receivable aging report. Aging, and it shows how old those receivables are, right? And so as we're going through it, we always start with the oldest ones, right? The ones that are 90 days plus, they're past due. And that's where...
So you have term when you mail out an invoice, you have terms on your invoice, so which will say this payment or this amount on this invoice has to be paid within 30 days or 10 days or has to be paid immediately. So those are the terms you're talking about, and those are presented in an aging report.
Correct.
Okay.
And so there'll usually be some columns. It'll be like a current column that says, hey, they're within the current terms, whatever those terms might be. Let's say if it's a 30-day term, you say, hey, they're within that term. They're still seen as current. If they get beyond that, all of a sudden, hey, now it goes in that 0 to 30 days past the due date. Mm-hmm. So again, if your terms are, let's say they're 30 days, okay, if they're in that 0 to 30-day column, now they're beyond 30 days, right? They're beyond the current column. So they could be 0 to 30, they could be 31 to 60, they could be 61 to 90, they could be 90-plus. So 90-plus is 3 months. But again, if your terms are 30 days, they're 90 days beyond the 30 days. You're at 120 days. There are a lot of numbers on here. But you're already 4 months beyond. You've delivered a product or service, and they haven't paid you. So as we're looking at that far right column of the 90-plus, that's a pretty important thing to say, hey, are we ever going to collect this stuff?
That vendor, that customer is using you as their bank.
Yes, they are.
If they were at the bank, they'd have to be making payments to the bank. But they aren't doing that. They're using you instead.
That's
not
one of those
making payments to you. And then so often is the case that you will be afraid to call them for fear of upsetting them, asking them for money.
Wait, say that again, Jack. You're afraid to call them to ask for your money.
Because right. You don't want to lose them.
You don't want to upset them and lose
That's
them, right?
That's right.
So you want to, instead of we'll continue
you
to...
You want to get more like that who will take you out even farther.
Give them more product and services and not get paid for. That's a great...
That's a good way to go business. Yeah, to do business.
we can grow our sales tremendously. Just not the cash collections, right? so we're looking at this case. And so in this case, there was $100,000-plus that was owed. And so, as you might imagine, this is a very sore spot for our client. And the client was thinking about, hey, I want to get rid of this customer. And we said, hold on, not so fast. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about potential different approaches. Because, again, I'm guessing most of you have been through versions of this before where maybe you've had to cut off a customer. Maybe you actually had to go sue a customer or try to collect from them. And you know what happens immediately is whatever is owed. Let's say it's $100, right? Well, you can take $50 right off the top in terms of what you might ever collect from this person, right?
That's right.
Because there's going to be fees involved. There's going to be negotiations involved. There's lawyers often that kind of get involved. There's courts that get involved. There's timing that gets involved. So all of a sudden, that $100 is going to be worth pennies. Yeah, that, maybe you get maybe
right.
get $10.
Your time, all the aggravation time. You know, you don't want them to go there. You don't want them to be old.
No. But when it comes to where it's like a bigger number, then you start to pay attention. That becomes a possibility. Hey, it might be worthwhile. Hey, if I can only collect 50 to $100,000, well, it might be worth my time and effort to do that because it's better than a zero for sure, Jack. But, hey, isn't it better to get 100 of the 100 as instead of getting just 50 of it? We said, here, let's try something. You mentioned the whole bank thing before, Jack. That's exactly the approach that we took with this with our client. We said, hey, why don't you go to your customer, sit down, because our client knew the owner of the company and talked before. So why don't you get an appointment with them, ask them to see their financial statements. And there was dead silence. Can I do that? Am I allowed to allowed to ask him that? And, we gave him the same talk that you just kind of gave your Jack. Hey, you're playing the bank, and a bank would ask for that kind of stuff, right? So our client was very trusting, which is good. So he went and had the meeting, asked for the financial statements, and he came back and said, and to my surprise, he called his gal outside and said, hey, can you bring in the latest P&L balance sheet and give it to the client? He goes, we sat down, walked through there, and saw what was all there. Got a tour of the facility, see what was kind of going on to kind of confirm what this customer of his had been telling him about how the things were growing and things were going okay. So got a sense of what was kind of going on. And part of what he was able to learn from the financial statements was that the money that he owed our client was, I think it was number two or number three in terms of his biggest debts. So our client was pretty important to him. It wasn't like, he was number 15 or 20 on a list of 100 people that he owed money to. It's like, what's another $100,000? No, it was meaningful to both parties. So what they were able to do is they were able to have a discussion about how to get that start to get paid down, where they were doing, I don't know if you want to call it kind of a COD kind of plus almost kind of thing, where they were paying for things as they go, plus they were paying off some of the old debts. And they'd worked out an arrangement to have that kind of get paid down. And it got paid down over the next 6 months. But we continue to work with them. Where again, they're everything they're buying kind of more on COD, and then they'd pay some off on the old stuff. They had a schedule set where they would be paying it off. And it's been a few years now, and it's turned out to be a wonderful customer for our client.
Oh, the
that they've saved.
They respected our client, and he came across professional. He came across willing to work with them as he did. And that, you know, what could be better? What could be better than turning what would normally be adversarial into a big plus like that?
That's right.
Why was he able to do that?
Well, because he was looking at the financials. Using his financials, and he's also using his customers' financials to start to make these decisions and see what was kind of going on. And you start to confirm about what I'm seeing and hearing out here. Is it showing up here in those numbers the way it's perceived? And it was. And so it worked out very well. We're, again, maintaining the customer. They're both now making money. They're from that standpoint with each other, and which is a good thing. Not only are they selling them stuff, they're also collecting money from them, which is a fantastic thing. But if this hadn't worked out like that, then this would have been a chance where, yeah, they would have almost had no other choice but to fire the customer. And that's where he was. I think, you know, if we hadn't been involved, my guess is that's where our client would
that's
have gone.
Right.
It would have wound up in litigation somewhere. Probably would have gotten, you know, pennies in the dollar in terms of what they would have collected. They'd have gotten something. They would have lost a customer, been all kinds of lawyer fees and distractions and everything else.
All negative stuff.
That's right. So if you're looking to or thinking about firing a customer or don't even know, to be able to use your numbers to kind of see that, because not all customers are created equally. So firing a customer is a great way to start to kind of use your financials, Jack, to kind of get a sense for stuff. What else can you use your financials for? How else do you use your financials? Lots of different ways. Lots of different ways. What about...
Yes, there are.
What about if somebody's going to come sell... If somebody wanted to come buy your business? Do you get those emails, those letters, folks kind of calling, hey, I'm interested in buying your company, Jack. Hey, I got a client of mine interested in buying your company. It's a relative. Once you've been in business for 5, 6, 7, 8 years, there's usually a steady stream of folks.
How do you determine that? How do you determine what the value is? What I'm going to ask for my company?
Good question. Well,
do I need a financial statement to tell me that? I think I do. I got to get a sense of that. So the financial will be the place to start.
It's one of those questions we'll often ask owners in terms of, and we ask our clients a lot of times too, because it's part of the thoughts we get in their head is, you know, most folks don't start their company with the idea of getting out of the company. That's not why they're starting it. And at some point that becomes an idea in their head, either from a standpoint of they're just getting worn out by the business. They're just getting to a certain age where, hey, I got to start thinking about, you know, what's the next 5, 10 years look like and do I transition out? They're starting to think about that. But if you ask them, what's the company worth?
No idea.
We get all kinds of answers back.
No, wait, yeah, no, I'm wrong on that. They do have ideas as to what it's worth.
Right.
But it isn't using the financials in a correct way, if you will, if they use them at all. But they feel they're entitled to $1 million. That's what, you know.
Right. They'll give a number out there, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's good. So we'll start there. Now I dig a little bit. Okay, well, how'd you arrive at that number? And not quite sure what you're going to hear from there, right?
Yeah, that goes all over the place.
Now, a couple times out of 100, you might hear somebody say, hey, well, we're looking at this, and we've got an adjusted, you know, discretionary cash flow of this, and I applied a multiple of that, and here's what... Okay, I hear that, again, 1 or 2 times out of 100. The other 98, 99 times are, I feel this is what I'm entitled to.
That's right.
I've committed, you know... 37 years of my life to this.
That's right, you know, and it's got to be at least worth that.
Yeah, right. Or early on, I missed out payments from my corporate job that I never made up, here's how much debt I have, or here's what I think I need to retire. Whatever it might be, they've got some version that they're going to maybe be able to defend it or support it, but you can start to poke holes in it real quick usually, right, if they aren't using some numbers to really be able to support it. So what do you do? Well, you got to stay tuned. We'll talk about when we come back and break here. What do you do to figure out how to use your financials to help potentially sell or consider selling your business? So stay tuned. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini.
And stick around. We got more Dirty Secrets to Small Business coming your way here on Integrity Radio, WINT 1330 AM, 101.5 FM, and online, WINTradio.com. All right. Welcome back to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. We're here on our final segment, and it goes so fast
final
every week.
Final segment already? Holy Christ.
Jack, when you're having fun, goes fast,
time
doesn't
goes
it?
Fun. Yeah, it's like, it's not Thursday already, is it?
Not yet.
It's
close.
Not that much fun, but it's pretty good.
I've had some of those days, too. I go, wait, is it light outside? It was dark. No, wait, okay, what happened? What day is it? It's still July 3rd, Jack.
Good.
All right. Independence Eve. All right. So we're talking about our financials, how to use them, and we're teasing into the break about using them to present your company to look for a sale. And how do you come up with the value for the company? What's kind of going on? And if you try to do it without using your financials, it's going to be a painful process.
Very painful. Very painful in many ways. Not. I can't think of very many positive ones other than you stumble out and start throwing numbers out. And you don't know what you're talking about.
So that either scares people away because you're saying one thing one day and something else the other day, and what you then present and give them to back it up doesn't match what you said on day one or day two, all right? Or they see it as an opportunity, and all of a sudden you're going to get bought for much less than you're probably worth from that standpoint because you aren't able to present the story. So one of the things that's often not known, I guess that's the right phrase, from a lot of small business owners is exactly how much compensation benefit they're getting out of the company. Much like many employees don't really appreciate if they're with a company that they have health care benefits, but they don't really appreciate what the cost or of those benefits are because they only see like a copay. And they may have money coming out of their check every week or every couple of weeks, but they don't necessarily see that. So again, they don't necessarily know what's really the benefit for that. So if an employee who's getting a couple of those things can't keep track of it, well, an owner isn't often keeping track of all the benefits they're getting either. They get those same kind of benefits that an employee gets with healthcare and that stuff as well, but they get usually more. Some simple things like cell phones, perhaps maybe, or gas in their cars or car payments, or maybe there's some trips that they're taking. There could be a myriad of things that they're running through the company. And so one of the things you got to think about is, okay, if I'm truly going to sell, well, there's a big change in my life. Obviously, if you no longer own your company, that's a big change. Whether you work for that new owner or not, that could be a change. But then what's going to happen in your day-to-day life? Again, if you've never had to pay a credit card bill for for anything, right? Or for never had to pay for your monthly phone bill,
yeah.
Or for your internet connectivity or wherever it might be, because it's often a bunch of these little things that start to kind of go. And one of the things we help our clients do when they're starting to consider this is let's start to lay out what are you taking out of the business, what benefit are you getting? Yeah, so we'll put in the salaries and the healthcare and all
the
stuff too.
Distribution too and all that, but yeah, the little things that aren't obvious, that at least they aren't top of mind when you're doing them.
Right.
That, hey, I'm getting this benefit. You just automatically.
That's just how it
off to the company.
That's how it is.
The way it's all. Yeah. That's
right. You don't even often see it. It's again. It's you swipe the card. It's become second nature. So you sort of take it for granted maybe. And so what we typically find is that if you look at the owner's salary, that's often a small fraction of the total benefit that they're getting out of it. You kind of slipped in distribution, Jack, which I don't know if people heard. Distributions are another way to take money out of the company, where it's literally a check that gets written out of the business to the owner. It's not going through the pay cycle, but it's literally a check that gets written to the owner. There's ways that they start to take money out, and it can start to reinforce for them in terms of, hey, this is what I need. Hey, if all of a sudden I go from, if I had a salary that was, $75,000, well, that's well and good. But if all of a sudden I had another $50,000 of stuff that I'm taking out, Jack, okay, well, that's a much different number. Now I'm looking at $125,000 of stuff that I have to replace every year. And the way things work when you're going to sell, people often will apply a multiple to that. All right, so hey, if I got an extra $50,000, well, if you're going to sell, usually they'll apply a multiple of two or three or four times of that. So also now your selling price goes up by $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 because of you're showing real numbers in terms of what the real cash flow and how you're disseminating it to get benefits for it, right?
That's right.
So this can work very well when you're trying to present to be able to sell. We also had a case like this where we had a client who had gone through a transition before we had come in, where they had a deal worked out with the prior owner, and they were buying the prior owner out. And as we got to know this client of ours over the first year or so, you know, the discussion was here and there, would kind of come up every once in a while about the prior owner and different things that were kind of going on. But this prior owner was very big on these kind of things in terms of a bunch of other stuff. Okay, so the salary is one thing. But part of the business was, you know, some cash kind of coming in, so cash would come out of the drawer. There'd be, you know, credit card miles and points, and, you know, they get cash in for actual real dollars. I mean, we're talking tens of thousands of dollars a year of actual refunds of money coming in. Right?
A lot of things like that. Well, that's right. That add value to you or your customer. The selling price, ultimately, not your customer, but the selling price.
But what happened was we started to kind of go through this list of stuff. It was interesting as we kept going through, and you go from one to two to three, all of a sudden we're like 10, 12, we're at 15 things. All of a sudden you could see the blood pressure of our clients start to rise. We're going, what are you doing here? Why do you keep paying all this stuff? You could literally go to a bank, borrow money from the bank, pay this person off, let them kind of get all their money now and kind of go away. And you pay the bank now just what the bank is owed versus all this little stuff here and there and this and everything else. Plus, all of a sudden, you're now the official owner. And wouldn't you know it, that's what we wound up doing with this person over the next 6 months to kind of help make this thing kind of start to happen, because we started to dig in. Again, we use the numbers, Jack, so much to kind of start to dig into some of these things, to ask these questions.
Well, it's impossible to make a good decision, really, like we're talking about, with a small business without understanding the numbers and without using the numbers. You have to do that. You have to. Some certain things in life you have to do, and that's one of them. Not using the numbers is suicide. It's crazy.
It's going to get you eventually. It might not get you today. If you're early on starting out, if you're having some success, you know, the bad part about success is often success can cover up a lot of the shortcomings.
That's right. Or
what's kind of going on. And so there's a lot of lost stuff along the way, a lot of money spent maybe foolishly, opportunities perhaps that are missed, people that are held on too long. You know, part of what you want to look at, you know, if you're looking to hire somebody, Jack, that's one of the things we talk to clients about all the time in terms of how do you decide to hire somebody? And if I don't have a plan, we talked about the idea of a profit plan earlier in the show, Jack, in terms of being able to forecast out my revenues and expenses. And, okay, well, hiring somebody would be another expense line. So how do you decide to hire somebody or not to hire somebody? You know, if you're replacing somebody, if somebody leaves, you want to put somebody new, okay, that's one thing you can do.
Yeah, right? If you're going to hire somebody new that isn't in the plan, obviously you got to plug in that amount into the plan grid. I mean, yeah, you have to do that to see what impact you're going to have on profit. So if you put together a plan and measure against that plan all year, that's a very easy decision because you can see the impact. Without that, how do you make that? I don't know how you make that decision.
It's, you know, it's like I said, it's often by gut. Or a common way people often approach it is because, again, people get comfort. We talked about cash earlier, Jack. People get comfort from cash in the bank, right? So maybe, hey, you know, once I get enough money in the bank, Jack, to cover this person, or at least to cover part of that person, that's when I can make that choice to hire him. Yeah, you know, part of what we start to do, especially, you know, a lot of clients we start with will often be thinking much smaller. So a tip off to that would be they're thinking in terms of like hourly versus, let's say, salary. But if they start to think about salary, also, hey, instead of paying somebody 12 or 15 bucks an hour, I'm thinking about somebody I got to pay them a salary of $50,000 or $70,000. They can take a trying to swallow. I'm getting choked up here trying to even think about it. That's a big pill to swallow,
number, right?
And we say, look, don't make that crazy. Okay, let's take that. You know, that's $50,000. Okay, well, that's for a full year. We know, Jack. You'll know if somebody's right or not within the first 90 days. Usually in the first 30 days,
easy.
Right?
That's right. Very much so.
So instead of we're making a $50,000 decision, let's take one quarter of that. Let's look at a quarter. So for 3 months of that. Well, 3 months, that's all, I say only. It's only $12,500, Jack. It's a much different level decision where you're trying to make.
Easier decision to make with those little, not little changes. Those are big changes.
Right.
But they're bite-sized.
Yeah, to see. Your point is to see, Jack, if I plug in $50,000, it's going to reduce my profit by $50,000. Why do I need to plug it into the plan? What do you mean? I don't need to do the math in that. Well, it's like, wait a minute. Why are you hiring this person? Or what's this person going to do? Is this person, because again, usually you're hiring somebody because they're going to help you increase sales or decrease expenses. But either way, they're going to help you with profits, usually. So part of what they might be doing is they might be, and this is often the case, they might be freeing you up as the owner to be doing some other things that are better use of your time, that, you know, where they can handle some other things that you're doing now, that maybe you can free up to start to grow. Maybe that's part of what you're going to be able to do. But starting to see what impact do they have. Hey, they should help you increase your sales or decrease expenses somehow to make that they can pay for themselves.
It's not as scary as you would be looking at the annual amount that you're giving them, per your comments there, Adam.
So there's lots and lots and lots of ways, and we can try to cover. We covered half a dozen maybe tonight, maybe a little more, Jack, in terms of ways to start to be able to use your financials to make better decisions in your business. And it starts with having good financials. And often the case, we start with clients, they don't have very good financials. But you can get them in good shape, and you can certainly put together a plan. The plan, starting from scratch, you can kind of forecast it out. So getting that profit plan in place, looking ahead is a big part of this. But it's a big, big deal, and hopefully you got some good insights from tonight's show, and we appreciate you being part of it. You know, you can catch Dirty Secrets of Small Business every Wednesday, 7 p.m. Eastern. If you have any questions before the next show, you can email us at radio@MaximumVP.com or give us a call, 877-849-0670. If you miss any of today's show or any of our prior shows, you can get them all at DirtySecretsOfSmallBusiness.com. Or if you subscribe at iTunes, you can get it there, delivered right to your smartphone or smart device. And if you leave a review, that'd be fantastic. But you can subscribe there and get it every week. Hey, we appreciate you being part of it. And learn more Dirty Secrets of Small Business next Wednesday, 7 p.m. Eastern. Hey, thanks for listening on Integrity Radio, WINT 1330 AM, 101.5 FM, and online, WINTRadio.com.
But when you talk about destruction, don't you know that you can count me out?